Hello and welcome to the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. This is Joe from Cincinnati.
This is Jonathan, also from Cincinnati.
And I am Littlefinger.
So we have a little bit of a shake-up today. Mickey, our usual, I don't know if you want to call him a host of the podcast, he's having some things going on with his life, so he's not going to be available for this week and possibly into the next couple months. So now might be a good time to reduce the schedule on our podcast. I don't know if you guys noticed, but we haven't done anything for a couple weeks either. Partly because there's not a whole lot going on in the game right now between chapter packs and everything like that, but also Mickey has been a little busy as well, so that's going to try and continue. But in the meantime, we have Jonathan Herr as a guest. He is, for those of you who don't know, one of the good players in our meta. He won the Louisville regional, mm-hmm. as well as placing in the top four in the Indianapolis regional.
Yep.
Which he probably should have gotten to the final if it weren't for a critical mistake.
Yeah.
Which he might not even want to talk about.
Let's not talk about it.
So we're glad to have you on, John. You bring a unique insight to the game as a probably the most competitive player in our store.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm going to continue with this whole hosting thing. So as I said, we're going to try and do an episode maybe every 2 weeks, possibly a little bit longer. It all depends on the value of the podcast and the availability of the people doing it. So one thing I definitely want to discuss, as it is most recently the most recent major tournament in the at least the American meta, was Nationals, which was in our own backyard in Columbus. John, you went to Origins, right?
Yeah, I went, and Mike Scowl, the other co-host,
who also is not here.
I also went to Origins,
but you didn't play.
No, I didn't play. Yeah. I didn't play Game of Thrones, at least.
Yeah,
such a goober, Danny.
So there were a handful of people from Cincinnati who made the trek up. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed that there weren't more of us who went from here. I think Kelly and Amanda.
Matt also came up to Origins,
but did not play.
Also did not play. Yeah.
You guys are such bummers. I wanted to go, but I was in Puerto Rico for work, so...
Shucks.
I know.
I'm sorry, Joe. I'm now honor-bound to play the game as little as possible, because I said on air, if Lannister gets the next big box, I'm just dropping this game, and now it's happened.
Oh, but you weren't serious about that. That was just your little rage.
Yeah. I was like 95% sure they were going to get the next box, and it was pissing me off. Like, when they gave Stark the first box, I'm like, oh my god, it's just going to be Stark and Lannister mm-hmm. first, isn't it?
Well, but the Stark box was great. I greatly enjoyed the Stark box.
I just meant as far as the rotational order in which they're going to do them. They even with the big boxes, they're like, you got to stick to the books. Book one is all about the Starks versus the Lannisters.
Well, I mean, as bummed as I am that Lannister got it the second box, and I don't want to harp on this too much because we've already been criticized for hating on Lannister a little bit too much. Mainly you, Danny.
They can criticize all they want.
But, I can understand why they wanted to do it. I mean, Lannister and Stark are really the stars of the book series and the show, obviously. So it makes perfect sense for Stark to be first. It makes pretty good sense to have Lannister first from a thematics standpoint.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they took balance into consideration a little bit, but that's
the problem,
not the...
Is that they tend to go, like, thematically, it's awesome. Balance-wise, I'm not sure how this is going to go, but let's do it.
But the good news is, we saw the preview for the box. It doesn't look like they're going to really enhance the existing decks. They're really going to be spreading their wings a little bit.
Sure. Going wide instead of vertical.
Yeah. With those clan cards, with Tyrion being the lead.
And pushing an intrigue deck.
Yeah, and then Cersei, the true intrigue deck, which is certainly going to have Tower of the Hand and... Small council chamber and all those things. So.
Which I actually ran into a Lannister fealty deck that was trying to really push the intrigue challenge at Origins. I beat it, but
so it didn't go well.
Yeah, but he definitely got me down to like two cards on my second turn.
Yeah,
it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so in terms of Origins, mm-hmm. What was the meta like there?
So we got a pretty decent turnout. We had 85 people at the tournament. And so they decided that they announced prior to the tournament that we were going to do 5 rounds of Swiss. And then they were going to do, I think it was 24 plus 12, or no, 24 plus 8.
So they were top 32.
Yeah, so the top 24, and then anyone who tied on record of the 24th person, the additional 8 people would come in.
Oh, okay.
So that was kind of an interesting, it's their new tournament structure, which I had never played in a tournament that had a graduated cut like that. So I was interested to see how that would actually shake out. So yeah, after the first 5 rounds, it ended up being that there were a number of 3 and 2 players that were on 3 and 2 who were able to make the second day.
Wow, 3 and 2, and you make the mm-hmm. second day. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. What I thought was a little frustrating, though, is, you know, they cut and 3 and 2. Some 3 and 2s made it to the second day. Then they did 2 additional rounds. But after the end of the additional rounds, no one who was 5 and 2 made the cut.
So it was
kind of like, what's the point of having mm-hmm. the 3 and 2 players?
They made them fodder for the top players.
Exactly. You know, anyone who
wanted to buy that second pass, that 4-day pass.
Yeah. So it that I thought was a little interesting. I think that with different numbers of players in the tournament, you could have had some 3 and 2s make it, but the way that it was, the way that it shook out, no one did. And I think that there was a 5-1-1 was the lowest rank that made
was
it.
Was that
in.
An intentional draw?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. There were a couple of intentional draws. And one thing that was interesting was several people intentionally drew round 5 in order to make it into the graduated cut.
Wow.
So that I thought was a strange choice because
that's risky.
Your results don't reset going into the second round or going into the graduated cut, the final 2 rounds.
I bet they just were used to making the cut and then everything becoming equal again.
Well, I actually asked a couple of the people who did ID on round 5, like, why'd you do that? Like, you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And several of them were facing friends or metamates.
So
they're like, well, you know, yes, we're kind of hamstringing ourselves, but this at least gives us both an opportunity to make it into top cuts if we both win out.
Okay.
So I thought that was an
That's
interesting
noble.
Perspective. Yeah. But I think the top cut ended up being 3 people. So it was 5 people with 5-0 records, or not 5-0. With 30 points, and then 3 people with 27 points.
Okay.
So 30 points is 6 wins, 1 loss, and 27 is 5 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw.
Okay.
So again, no one at 4 and 2.
So that's kind of...
Or 5 and 2 made it in.
That's a bummer, but...
Yeah.
That's how the numbers worked out. Maybe in the off chance that all the top undefeated players bombed, someone with 5 and 2 could have gotten in. I don't know.
Well, I also thought it was an interesting choice that they made to cut to top 8 rather than top 16.
Well, yeah, going from 32 to 8 is a pretty steep cut, but I didn't know if that was going from 85 to 8
is, I think, fairly steep. And I actually looked up their published rules as to how the cut is supposed to go. And for their advanced level tourneys, they have 77 through 148, the number of participants, is supposed to be 6 rounds with a cut to top 16. So ideally based on their rules, that's what we would have done. However, with a graduated cut, they added an additional round, but cut back the number of people making the top cuts.
That seems awfully strange.
Yeah. So I thought that it was an interesting choice. I feel like the, you know, running 6 rounds and, cuts to top 16 would have been better. It ends up being the same number of rounds that you need to run, but it gives, you know, more people the chance to be the elimination.
I wouldn't
cut.
Expect them to run more rounds and then have more people get to the top.
But, you know, with 6 rounds in top 16, you're still doing 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or 11 rounds or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. With 7 rounds on top 8, you're
how many
also
there was how many people
rounds.
There though?
85.
Okay. I guess with a 6 can you really get a really the thing I like about tournaments is when they're structured so that by the end of it there's actually a
there's one undefeated.
Or not one undefeated, but at least a pretty like big difference between the people that get in the top. I hate it when tournaments mm-hmm. it's like there's 45-2s and 10 yeah. of them get in or something yeah. like that.
So looking at the standings, so it actually ended up being a nice cut at the top 8 because, you know, there are 5-30s and 3-27s and they all got in.
Yeah.
And then place 9 had 25 points.
Okay.
So there was a nice, you know, delineated cutoff point there.
Yeah, it's like when it comes down, like, when it comes down to tiebreakers, it's always annoying because I don't mm-hmm. know. At some point, I should be able to know whether or not I still have a chance to get into right. the top 8. And when it's like 1/4 of the X and 2s get in, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't yeah. know what my tiebreakers are. Can I just drop at this right. point and do something else?
Looking at if they had expanded it to the top 16, so 9 through 15 would have had 25 points. And then 16 would have been 22, and there would have been 2 people tied with 16.
Okay.
So that was still a fairly delineated point if they would have, you know, expanded it out to the top 16. Okay. So I thought that was just kind of an interesting... it was something new that they were trying out for Origins, or for their top-level events.
Well, it's the same thing they're going to be doing at Gen Con.
Right.
It's spread out over, like, 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or
it's
2 days.
2 days.
Yeah, it's starting on
they have the top 8 and the graduated in the same day.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's starting mm-hmm. at noon on Thursday, which I'm yeah, fine taking 2 days off to go.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to start on a Friday or a Saturday. Cause
yeah, they've...
I mean, that just can't be helped with
something
they've
like Gen definitely Con. Switched it up because what they've done previously... I can't remember if they did it last year because I did the Thursday one. But like I remember Netrunner used to have 2 grinders, one on Thursday, one on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and the top 16 of each grinder would get into the top 32 or something like that.
I think that's what they're doing for X-Wing at Gen Con. They're having 2 flights and then they're having the...
Yeah, so the... like it's just weird to me that it's there's only one... They've narrowed it down to just one grinder, so to mm-hmm. be in it at all, you have to come on Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally, I like when the tournaments are all on one day. Yes, it makes for a really grueling day, but I also am a person that can sit and play for 16 hours and yeah. stay fairly sharp. I feel like it gives me an edge if everything's on one day. It's split over 2 days.
It's never really made a whole lot of difference to me, since I can count on one hand the number of times I've ever gotten past like the Swiss round mm-hmm. of any tournament.
Yeah.
Well, when I play tournaments, I apparently intentionally play the worst house, so I haven't gotten to a final cut yet this season. I hope that I do in Gen Con, but bringing Night's Watch, I'm voting against myself for the most part. And I don't want to talk about this too much because I think literally everyone who's playing this game has talked about this with their own friends for a large amount of time. But Valor was officially spoiled. Valor Morghulis. The FFG released the preview to the 4th chapter pack and they showed the stats. And it is in fact a 2 gold, 0 initiative, 0 claim, 5 reserve, and just 1 revealed kill all characters. You can still save them. So... Bodyguards, Iron Mines from Greyjoy, Risen from the Sea from Greyjoy.
Duplicates.
These all save from Valor. But do you think that's going to shake up the meta at all?
I think it will. I don't know if it will last. Kind of like what happened with First Snow is you had decks that either tried to leverage First Snow or decks that tried to not get... you know, wrecked by First Snow. And then now I'm finding that, you know, unless you're Lannister, you're probably not running First Snow because Lannister is the only house that can really put the screws to using it. I think that's going to be similar to how the meta shakes out with Valar, where you know, the decks, the houses, everyone will either use it or tech against it to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then the decks that can really leverage it, you know, be it a Greyjoy that uses it offensively or what have you, they'll continue to use it. And then I think, I hope that it drops off. I didn't play 1.0, but hearing that, you know, it was such a staple plot in 90% of decks is not something that I am really looking forward to.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be a staple in this edition. You know, gold is a lot more important in this edition because, from what I understand, in 1.0, duplicates weren't really a thing. Saving wasn't really all that common compared to how it is today. Chuds were way better than they were. Like, you know, as the card pool grew in 1.0, basically all the super efficient characters became really good. Like, there was a couple that Luke Wortley told me about because I didn't play 1.0, but there's like one gold for 5 strength character, and then he did something bad if something happened at some point in the game, but when you're paying 1 gold for that, you don't really care if he kneels or whatever the trigger was. So there's a lot of low-cost, high-impact characters. And now, in this current meta, is still a lot of big characters. So 2 gold, and plus the gold curve went up in 2.0. So playing a plot with 2 gold that you kill all your characters and you don't get any claim, that can hurt you just as much as it can help you.
Yeah. I do think that it has a home in Tyrell. Being able to have the Arbor out and then, you know, play Valar and then have 5 gold instead of the 2, I think that could be an interesting play. I think I think it opens up some additional, you know, deck building opportunities. I just don't know how big of an impact they will have.
Yeah, when Valar was first revealed, I even said on the Facebook group, like, I think Tyrell's really going to like this plot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mainly because of the Arbor and because they have really good card draw, so they can repopulate better. They can repopulate their side of the board better. They have more gold to operate and rebuild.
Watch out for that lady in waiting.
Oh,
she'll be coming back.
You got to watch out for lady in waiting. Lady in waiting, more like waiting for more ladies.
It's true. That's a good one, Joe.
Oh, I didn't write that actually. Oh. I posted the Tyrell review today, which is Wednesday. By the time this is posted, it'll be a couple days ago. But the guy, our reviewer, who asked me to keep him anonymous, he wrote that joke when he was reviewing Lady in Waiting, and I just thought it was really funny because it's true. They have 2 ladies. Their central strategy is knights and ladies, and they have 2 ladies in the faction. But
yeah.
I thought that was funny. So I think Valar will help, but someone posted like a panic thread right after it was revealed, where they were like,
shocker.
Oh, this is going to ruin the game, and like, how am I going to, I'm going to buy my Mountain, I'm going to buy my Jamie, and I'm going to buy my Tywin, and then I'm going to lose them all. Like, yeah. Fuck this game, I'm out. And, you know, I just tried to tell them, like, and then someone said, like, the Tywin Reducer Rose Road setup is done. It's never going to happen ever again once Valor's out. I was like, I'm not buying that at all.
No.
I was like, okay, so you set up Tywin Reducer Rose Road, they set up whatever the fuck they want, right? And then they Valor you, and you Noble Cause. They have 2 gold in a blank board. You have 5 gold and 2 Reducer in a blank board.
But Tywin is dead, Joe. You don't understand.
Who cares? Close call the next turn.
I think Lannis is going to run to close call?
With Valar out? Yeah, I think so.
They have to draw into another Tywin, at least. At least you buy yourself, like, 4 turns, maybe.
Whatever. My point is, you know, Valar, if you do it on turn 1, you're putting yourself at a significant disadvantage because whatever you buy with that 2 gold, they can kill because they're going to buy more characters.
Yeah.
And they're going to kill that. And then at the end of turn 1, they have an actual board and you will have no board. And then, you know, it's just not going to be great for the person. So I didn't buy that at all.
There's plenty of ways it could work out. What if you recruited a guy with a dupe? What if you just did all locations? I mean, you're still only getting 2 gold.
You're still
turn,
only getting 2 gold.
But you don't lose any of the economy you've already spent, unlike your opponent.
Yeah.
See, I'm not convinced.
Or
so,
if you set up an Arbor, pro plays to Valar right after your Arbor set up.
Oh, and that
puts you on equal footing, and then you have more gold the rest of the game.
And that could be Tyrell's strategy, and that could help them out.
That's the deck I'm going to make.
I said, like, Tyrell Kraken is going to be where it's at once Velar comes up. You get all the gold and all the saves.
I don't expect Velar to often be a turn one play, though, if it's in a deck.
No, it won't be. So that guy on Facebook, he was really just, like, in a fever, like a frenzy, yeah. Just kind of like, they're going to kill my Tywin, and then I'm going to lose. And I was just, you know, calm down, dude. It's going to be okay.
I like how he used Lannister cards in his example. It makes me feel no remorse or sorry for him whatsoever.
He's such an asshole.
When I hear about Tywin and Tyrion and Le Mountain dying, it doesn't bring up any sense of emotion.
Sadness.
Other than happiness. I'm just like, I get like a smile comes
You're
to
like,
my face.
All like, all right. Sounds like a good day.
So I
think bodyguards are going to come back. I think that three bodyguards is going to be pretty common.
I don't know about three, but...
Yeah, depends on how prevalent Valor is.
Yeah, we'll see once the meta hits.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think it'll take some shaking out. I think initially people will be... Everyone will be bannering Kraken and running bodyguards. But once everything shifts, we'll see where it ends up.
Yeah. So, I'm hopeful. I think Velar will be good for the meta overall. I'm a little worried because, obviously, I don't want my board wiped. As a defensive player, I want my characters to stay. But I do have Maester Aemon, so that'll help a little bit. Keep my most important character on the board, even if Aemon has to sacrifice himself to do so. But, I think it'll
start
be...
Start packing those healing hands.
You may be.
Or healing arts or healing expertise or whatever it's called.
Yeah, maybe you want healing expertise with the house maester, the neutral maester.
Sounds like a pro play to me.
Valor makes me even less enthusiastic about the game. I just hate all... There's like already tons of kill, and then you just start putting kill on plots. I know it was a card previously, but the game is not the same as 1.0 right now.
Yeah,
it is not.
And I've expressed ad nauseum my concern about targeted kill. I don't think, you know, I was talking to some 1.0 players, and they were saying like in 1.0, if you kept a character on the board for 2 to 3 turns, that's a pretty good thing going on. I was like, see, that sounds stupid to me. So hopefully we don't return to that. Because, I mean, I come from L5R, and I've said this before, and when L5R, losing a character was a big fucking deal. In this game, it seems like they're like, you just lose them every turn.
Yeah, there's a lot of losing characters. I have the same sort of problem. In most games, I expect kill effects to be roughly equivalent to how much I paid for the character, and in Game of Thrones it is the exact opposite. It's like, did you do an intrigue challenge against me and pay 1 gold to get rid of my 7 cost character?
Yeah. I think that there's, I don't know, I'm not as concerned with the amount of targeted kill, and I'm not as down on the meta as some of you guys are.
you're fine. You're doing good.
Well, you're doing well, right?
Yeah. But the
the result of winning is
a good
mood.
I think that there's, you know, obviously the Stark deck doesn't really care how much targeted kill people are running. I think that there's a Martell deck where you are running all 5 cost or lower characters, and you really don't care if, you know, one or more of them die.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just you have to really change how you do some of your deck building.
I want to stop for a second and talk about something. I don't know if other metas have been having this problem, but we have some people in our meta that I feel have fallen into sort of a trap with Martell. It just reminded me when you said 5 costs or lower. I think there's like something in Martell that a lot of people aren't seeing, because they really like all of the tricks. Like, they like having all the attachments that remove icons. Like having Ymiria that steals icons. They like having Tyene, Sand just poisoning people. And they like having Quentin blowing up and killing people. And, you know, a couple of other things. Just a general advisory. You still have to include cards that gain power in a deck.
Yeah.
I've seen three or four Martell decks kind of circulate around. And I've, like, talked to some people about, like, what they're putting in their decks. And some guy was like, I put in like 3 Tiny Sands, 3 Quintins, because I can use Close Call to just put Quentin back into the discard pile so I can play him again and kill him again. And they have like Wildfire to facilitate that. And I'm like, so that's like really expensive with like you're running like 6 costs. Some they even have like a Doran sometimes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you have like 3 like through like the Red Viper at 7 costs. And he's like, oh well, I took the Red Viper out. And
I'm like, yeah,
really. And then I'm like, do you have Doran's game? And they're like, nope. And even like some of them forget to put Knights of the Sun in the deck.
Yeah, I do like Knights of the Sun in the Martell deck. A lot of people are running Palace Guards in favor of
Which is bizarre to me. Palace Guards over Knights of the Sun.
I can see the argument, but it's like, you need that renown.
I can't really
see
the
argument. So the only reason I'm bringing this up is that I, even though I said I wasn't going to play Game of Thrones this much more, I got sort of guilt-tripped into playing a game against the Martell deck, and at the end of it, he told me my deck was no fun to play against whatsoever because I was playing Baratheon.
Well,
and
he was right.
The problem was that he first turn Gaston, and all I had to do was just never attack him, and I won
just
the game.
Just win in dominance.
Because he was like, he would throw 3 challenges at me, I would defend against them, or I wouldn't. I would just let him get through. And then he'd only usually gain, like, 1 or 2 power a turn. My painted table would steal one of it, and I wouldn't make any challenges. And the game ended with me at, like, 15 power and him at 2. And I'm like, he's like, that's no fun. You get this. I can't believe, like, how can you have a deck that just does nothing? And I'm like, dude, if you had had dudes with renowned mm-hmm. winning challenges, you would have actually been able to keep power. It's just that you cut all of them out of your deck. That's why there's... I'm assuming there wasn't a whole lot of Martell fealty at Gen Con. They always pair it up with, like...
Lion.
Lion, because Lion mm-hmm. has all the renown, the money, and stuff
One thing
that
I've been toying around with, I haven't made the deck yet, but I've been toying around with it in my head, is doing a Martell deck, pairing it with maybe something like Rose or something, but also now trying to utilize Attorney for the King to give all my knights... renown.
Yeah.
Because
like those are all like excellent ways to gain power.
Well, I mean the old knight deck got wrecked by First Snow
and
you can't run it anymore. But now with Martell you got Knights of the Sun that are 4 costs to stick around. Mm-hmm. You got if you pair it with Rose, you've got Loras, Knight of Flowers.
You still have Knight of Flowers.
Still has renown.
You have the Red Winds.
Yeah, the Red Rhine Twins. And then you have a bunch of Chudley knights, the House Martell knight, and then the Hedge knight. I think I'm kicking around that in my head now.
Well, it is a lot of knights.
It is a lot of knights, and I just don't know if there's
and Quentin, obviously.
And Quentin's a knight, and so I don't know if there's enough to really make a deck out of it right now. But that's something that I've been playing around with because, like you said, whenever I play Martell. The games just go long because there's not a very good way of winning outside of Doran's game
I don't know, our meta just expected if you had more tricks, you'd eventually overpower the opponent and just be able to get unopposed challenges and steal power from them.
I don't think it's even our meta. I've played Octagon games against Martell decks, and they're just, it's slow. That's why they bring in the Lion banner, because they need the renown from Jamie and the Mountain to really speed it up. Because I've had games, and people have told me that Night's Watch is weak against Martell. They're like, oh, they can take your icons, and then you lose the wall. I mean,
they can't
come
really
on.
Take your icons.
But Nymeria can.
Nymeria.
If you have 1 intrigue icon, they can take the intrigue icon and then kneel the wall. And so people were saying, like, you know, that's a big deal. You lose the wall for a couple rounds, you're not getting any power. It's like, well, guess what? Neither are they. So I've had games that go like 8 plots because I've lost the wall 4 turns out of the 8, but I still win 15-4 or something because Martell's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting there, they're winning challenges, but then I can win a power challenge back and get the power that they got back from them. I mean, it's just even Mickey made a Martell Lion deck that was focused on like Sir Ilan Payne and a couple other kill effects out of Lannister, and it was painful to play against, but I still beat him most of the time. I think I beat him 3 out of 4 games, or maybe 2 out of 3 games, just because, I mean, I lose the wall, and I lose my big characters that I care about, but eventually I'm going to get the wall back, and eventually I'm going to outpower you because you're not gaining any power.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about for Martell players, definitely.
That is just something I had in the back of the mind to bring up. We can get back on our regularly scheduled programming now.
Well, in terms of what we have to talk about now, I mean, I think that covers pretty much everything that's been going on recently. I would like to point out, or for those who have not been who aren't really that active in the Facebook group or what have you, I've been organizing some review articles, and I did the Night's Watch one. I originally intended to do all eight, but then I realized I don't play all eight enough, and it's a lot to write. So my Night's Watch review got such a great reception, and the basic concept was I just wrote, what are the best cards from the first cycle for Night's Watch? Why are they good? What are the worst cards for Night's Watch? Why are they bad? And then what are some other cards that were released that have a specific impact on Night's Watch, whether they be neutrals or from other factions? And people really enjoyed it, so I started reaching out to people I knew who I know have a certain loyalty to different factions and asking if they'd like to do the same thing for their faction. And John, you wrote one for Stark.
Even though I don't have Stark loyalty, I still wrote it.
Yeah, three tournaments with Stark.
I mean, I played.
You have Stark familiarity.
But yeah.
You have Stark familiarity.
Yeah.
And Chris Thompson from Indianapolis.
Just keep lying to yourself.
What?
Just keep lying to yourself, John.
Chris Thompson, I had write Lannister. And it's been a lot of fun coordinating with all these people who have a certain passion for the factions that they're running and how they feel about the cards that are released. And it drums up conversation, and it drums up controversies a little bit. People were pretty pissed when Chris said Into the Mountain was the best Lannister card released in the game. In the first cycle, so it's been a lot of fun, and so far I've gotten out Night's Watch, Lannister, Stark, and Tyrell. Hopefully in the next couple weeks I'll be getting Greyjoy and Targaryen, and then Baratheon and Martell will be following up on those in the next couple weeks. I haven't decided if I want to do one a week or two a week or whatever.
Four a week.
Probably two a week. Probably want to get them out before Gen Con.
Yeah, two a week is probably the right call. I'm just waiting on the articles right now, so it's been a lot of fun, and I highly recommend them. They're at wardensofthemidwest.com. All four of the posted articles are there now, and I'm intending to have the other four up by, you know, whenever I can get them. So with that, is there any closing thoughts on the first cycle?
I don't got any.
I think we've talked enough about it. You know, I think it's been analyzed to death, and I think we got it pretty good. Danny?
Not anything on the cycle.
Okay.
We've spent like several episodes over the course of several months talking about the cycle.
Fair enough.
If I haven't said it already, then it's probably not important.
Yeah. So with that, that's the end of this episode. I'd like to give a shout out to, first of all, John for being a guest on the podcast.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And in addition, thanking him for writing the article for Wardens of the Midwest, as well as Chris Thompson, who wrote, the anonymous Tyrell writer who wrote for us. And in addition, all the future writers that I'll be posting in the next couple weeks. Thank you for your time and effort. It's been great. It's been really fun to coordinate and everything. And people are really enjoying them in the community. Do you have any shout-outs you'd like to do, John? All right, Danny.
As always, we will be ending the episode with a nice, fun little fact.
Uh-huh.
This one is going to be about game, the show, or the books in general. But I just was talking to one of my friends, James, and he's like really in deep with like a lot of the lore of different things and keeps up with the authors a lot more than I do. And he told me something last night I didn't realize. Apparently, the only like outside social media contact George R.R. Martin really participates in is he's got a live journal account, which
he can't
do
Twitter.
What?
He can't do Twitter. You know why?
You're going to ruin my job.
Go ahead.
Well, he can't do Twitter because they gave him 140 characters and he killed them all. Thanks, John! I know it's an old joke, but it's still it's funny. I was going to put a fresh twist on it.
All right.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is the last time I do this, Joe.
No, it's not. You're going to keep doing it. All right, with that, thanks for joining us, everybody.
Bye.
Did you end it already?
No.
We're still going?
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.